Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, darlings. It's Derek. Before we get into this week's episode, I just wanted to say Kyler and I support the Black Lives Matter movement and stand in solidarity with everyone fighting for justice and equality. We encourage you listening to do something, anything, to keep the momentum going, whether that's make donations to memorial funds or policy reform organizations, read up about class and race and police brutality, make your voice heard to politicians, especially in places where law enforcement is killing unarmed Black people, make sure Black people and other people of color are vital parts of your communities, IRL and otherwise. You can support Black-owned businesses, call out your racist family members, vote. Do as much as you can, and then do a little more, and keep doing it. That's key. Make this as much of a part of your routine as watching a 1980s soap opera that did not introduce a Black series regular until the fourth season, okay? We gotta change the culture. We must change the culture, and we can all do better. All of us. Especially privileged white people who, you know, drink champagne. Hello and welcome to Dynasty As They Want to Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series, Dynasty. I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me is my co-host and husband, Kyler K. Jafari.
Hidely ho, party people.
Hi. Well, I wanted to start off the episode at the top with some reader mail. We got a message in the mail.
Oh, boy.
This is an email that comes to us from listener Tony. He went to nastypodcast.com to write us a little note. Subject, Jeff's office. Dear Kyler and Derek, he spelled our names right, which is like a huge
ultimate
win.
Stalker.
No, I was applauding his effort because we have really weird fucking first names. Thanks, Mom and Dad. And it's hard to spell them, but he spelled them right. Anyway.
Wait, who's mommy and who's daddy?
No. Our moms and dads before cursing us.
I was getting worried.
Weird first names. Not, we don't have the same mom and dad. Now that would be an episode of Dynasty. I've been enjoying your Dynasty podcast every week and intrigued to hear your thoughts about the decor in Jeff's office. I've always wondered about the modern art reclining nude sculpture and was trying to find the inspiration. It looks like Henry Moore, but Kyler was going to say who he thought the sculpture was made or inspired by and then couldn't remember, or aka I think I might have cut you off on that episode. Anyway, do you have any thoughts? And thanks for the podcast, Tony. What were you gonna say? Do you know, Kyler?
No, it probably was Henry Moore. I mean, it's definitely the like big brutalist sculptural style that swept the European continent in the late 70s and sort of made its way into department store knockoff, you know, items available for purchase
yeah.
in America. So, you know, I'm sure that's what it was inspired by. Obviously, I don't think they have Henry Moore sculptures in that size.
No, so
in Jeff's office.
Tony, because I appreciate your message so much, I did do some investigation and I screenshotted the sculpture. Now, here's what's interesting. Maybe it appears in later episodes, but the last few scenes that we've had in Jeff's office, now that it's been remodeled by his wicked brother-in-law, there's one instance where Adam comes in there and in this week's episode, Joseph comes for a visit and the sculpture is not there. So maybe they moved it for the way they were shooting. But when Kirby comes to visit,
it was
you
on
can
from the live.
Clearly see it. Yeah, maybe it's real. But no, I don't think it is an actual Henry Moore. I think
Well, no,
you're
I don't
right.
think he ever worked in small scale.
Here's the thing. The way it's shot, you kind of don't see the bottom. So it could sort of be laying down. And
lying down.
Be one of those.
Lying.
No, yeah, these are really honest sculptures. Like, they're very truthful.
You know, you've
form.
Been to college.
I think it's probably just a case of a knockoff because Henry Moore had been working for a long time before the 80s and obviously was very well known. So I think it was a knockoff, well, but I couldn't even figure out
I think the 80s
the knockoff
was a time when people with a little bit of money or a lot of bit of money adapting taste. I mean, but this is like what the bourgeois does, right? They don't have taste. They just acquire taste. And, you know, what Henry Moore was like doing shit in the 30s, 40s, 50s. I mean, I think he kind of exploded in the 60s. But,
yeah,
you know, by the 70s, he was like mass-produced art, almost like Andy Warhol or something. So, like, every corporate structure had like this massive blob with a hole in the center, courtesy of Henry Moore. I mean, we have him to thank for all of this, like, ugly, oversized art in front of, you know, any corporate office park now. So thank you, 80s.
Yes. Well, thank you also to Tony for the question. I love it when you guys write in and really want
to. I'm glad to know that everybody else is in tune to this just as much as we are. In some cases, probably more so.
Yeah. No, I mean, I had.
It takes more than four eyes to see all of the stuff on the screen. So I appreciate the call outs.
Yeah. Well, in our case, six eyes because you do wear spectacles. But yeah, good eye, Tony. And let us know if there's anything else as we travel along on our journey through all nine seasons of Dynasty, if there's anything
all nine
that
count
you're
them.
Interested in. The other thing I was when I was going through and looking, we already talked about the bird sculpture, what do you call that?
I call it a birds in flight sculpture. I don't know. I don't know if there's a formal title for them, but yeah. They were sort of just a cliche at that point.
The other modern art, there's a couple of paintings that looks by the same painter. I don't think it's attributed to anybody
legitimate.
I think that's legitimate.
A pictorial representation of the Order of Jeff's Mind.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is, because he's clearly still going cuckoo because of whatever the hell Adam Carrington put in the paint. Do we want to tell everybody what we're enjoying while we're talking about this week's episode, The Locket?
You tell them. I don't know what this stuff is.
Well, for this week's episode, we're just kind of keeping it simple. We're having a nice glass of white wine. What is this again? It's vegan.
I don't know. It's like weird. I never think the wine needs to be vegan. So whatever it is, it's delicious, crisp, light, and delightful.
And it's from France.
Vins de France.
Just like Kirby Anders.
Yeah, and we're having it with some, you know, brie, which you can never leave out on the counter long enough. It cannot be soft enough. Like, I want brie to be almost liquid, but not quite.
You know, I always think about Janice Dickinson when I eat brie. Because
what do you think about her?
Well, I love her. I worked on one season of America's Next Top
Model. I thought you were
going to
say you worked on Janice Dickinson.
No, but lots of people have. No, she's the real deal. I worked on America's Next Top Model. It was like the second season, I think. And I'll never forget, there was a big hunk of brie at Craft Services one day before one of those judging segments. And she
very
went
judgy.
Over and grabbed it and ate this slice of brie like it was a piece of pizza.
Was it as big as a piece of pizza?
No, it wasn't that big, but it was like a fucking real sizeable slice of brie. Mm-hmm. And she just nom nom nommed on that.
A hunk of brie.
Yeah. But I was like, I couldn't believe it, but I was also sort of like enamored with the fact that she just didn't give any fucks and was like, I'm hungry. There's a big hunk of brie there and it's melty and creamy and delicious in my mouth. So the other thing is I'll never forget driving her around downtown Manhattan, and there was like a fight or something, like a domestic disturbance happening, and she was like, pull over, and she rolled the window down and started like yelling at this couple that were having a fight. She like leaned her skinny little ass out the window and was like, don't talk to her like that. And then I think she gave the woman some money or something. I don't know. She was a character. I love her.
Let's just say Brie is an affordable luxury. It's $4 and you feel special when you buy it and when you eat it.
You just gotta leave it
out. But it ain't caviar and champagne. Let's get real.
Well, I'm gonna cut myself off another little slice of Brie, put it on these real fancy crackers that we got, and then we're gonna get into this week's episode, The Locket.
If you have to cut Brie as opposed to spreading Brie, it's not warm enough yet.
Well, maybe I'll spread my legs before I spread the Brie.
Oh, that's hot.
Today's installment of Dynasty as They Want to Be is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our darlings a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast. That's NASTY podcast to browse their unrivaled selection of audio programs. You can actually listen to the late great goddess Diane Carroll read her autobiography, Legs Are the Last to Go, where she dishes on Dynasty and details her struggle being the first African-American actress to star in her own television series. There's so much material in Audible that's magnifying black voices. It's great. To get started, simply go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast, or you can text nasty podcast to 500-500. What a firecracker this week's episode was.
Really? I thought it was just pretty even keel, nicely done, more satisfactory than some of the episodes that have come before this season.
No, I really liked it.
You think it's a firecracker because
it was a firecracker because it moved the plot forward. You know, this whole oil rig blowing up Steven might be
dead. This was definitely an episode of information management.
Yeah, it moved us forward. We had visits from some characters we haven't seen. We've had some characters that haven't had scenes together in a couple of episodes come together. And then we had some character development from the newbies that made me kind of like respect them and kind of get into them a little bit more. And then, you know, we're keeping our globetrotting trend going because there's a trip to Southwest Asia. So I was here for it. Like, I was really on the edge of my seat wondering what was going to be
happening. Wait, were you really on the edge of your seat?
Well, mostly because I've been eating so much during Corona times that I've kind of gained a few pounds.
You can't even fit all the way into the couch anymore.
I can't. No. Well, anyway, I guess we just need to talk about Stephen Carrington being presumed dead.
Yeah, everybody seems pretty hunky-dory about he's dead. So there's that aspect. But Blake is the one shining asshole through all of the misery that says, no, I don't believe that. Because, you know, Blake is doing his usual. It's true because he says it's true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can sort of knock him for a lot of things, but I wouldn't even call this optimism. It's just more like Blake wills it to be true, which is very much in opposition to most certainly his own wife, Crystal, who can't, like, fucking open a can without breaking a nail. But then you've also got Alexis, who kind of has her sort of roundabout schemes. They're maybe more effective than what Crystal's up to. But Blake's the one that's just sort of like, I'm going to make it happen, and it's true. And, you know, he's very much that sort of like obnoxious male stereotype in a way. But
as much as without him,
the story would not advance. So I guess I kind of acknowledge that side of it.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I appreciate his optimism, I'm kind of really pissed off at the fact that how he brushes everybody off in this episode and takes this on as his personal mission, even though he's the one who caused, I think, is the most responsible for this rift. Now, Alexis doesn't agree with me, but I think he's most responsible for the rift between Steven and then everybody else.
Well, the ultimate thing was about Steven's problem with his own homosexuality / bisexuality, gender fluidity, whatever the hell it is. And
well, it's not gender fluidity. I'm pretty sure he identifies
fluidity,
as male. Yeah,
which that's an unfortunate term. Sorry to say that. Well, because it sounds like, you know, sexual juices.
No, words matter. All that.
No. Yeah, you're right. All this kind of goes back to the original problem between Blake and Stephen, which is just that Stephen can't reconcile his own personal life, whatever that may be.
And Blake is the driving force in that.
Yeah, Blake's really the one who not only is the driving force, but drives him out of the house, and it turns into what we have right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's this sort of
explosion in the Polynesian seas, and we got to go figure out who's dead and alive.
You know, at one point, Alexis does blame Crystal for bringing Sammy Joe into the house and him having a relationship with her, but she's just grasping at straws. That's not why he
left. But Crystal
left.
Is, like, so easy to blame, because, I mean, in a weird way,
Well, at least she fucking stands up for herself to Alexis, and she's like, look, I know you're upset because your son's probably dead, but that doesn't have a goddamn thing to do with this right now.
It's interesting, though, because Alexis and Crystal can have their moments, and Alexis doesn't need to get in a fight to have her way. Crystal does. And so here, instead of Crystal, like, you know, taking Alexis to the lily pond to duke it out, she just kind of says words. And for some reason, Crystal's words are never as powerful as Alexis's words.
Alexis, why did Sammy Joe leave this house? Because you bought her off. You paid her to get out of Stephen's life.
Yes!
Well, the fact is, if she had stayed, maybe they could have made a go of it.
Made a go of it? There was nothing between them.
There was.
Oh, really? What? Love.
Yes. A very fragile but special kind of love.
Yeah, I think in this instance, Alexis was totally out of line, and Crystal was right. You know what else was out of line?
You know why? Because Alexis makes decisions and moves forward, and that way she's a little bit like Blake. Crystal just, like, kind of mopes by the pool. I love that in the second season, the crazed fortune teller identifies Crystal as the Queen of Cups, right? Because she's just, like, hanging out, mirror, mirror, on the wall, like, looking in mirrors, looking in the pool, moping about. She's, like, hanging out with the globe in the library, which is this round globule, you know, thing.
We
it's
know
all
what
very,
a globe
sort of mysterious.
Is. Well, look here. This is a lot of Blake's fault, because look, Fallon number one wants to join him on the trip to Southeast Asia to try to find Stephen, and he says no. Crystal wants to join him, and he says no. Alexis wants to join him, and he says no to all three of these women who can provide emotional support, intellectual support. But what's the difference between Alexis
and the
other two?
Blake doesn't have emotions, and he has his own intellectual support.
Okay, I guess that's fair, but these other women, especially Fallon and Alexis, have a vested interest in this because it's their brother and son. But my point is, the difference between the three of these women is that Alexis does not need permission from a man to do anything. And so she figures it all out and books the same flight. Unfortunately, she cannot book a first class seat, but she gets on the same goddamn plane regardless.
Well, that's no fault of her own, as she points out to the stewardess of the first class lounge.
Excuse me, madam, but this is our first class lounge.
But it's not my fault this airline didn't have enough space to sell me a first class ticket. I'm looking for someone.
You'll have to speak to our chief steward.
Alexis, what in the devil are you doing here?
You know, I used to think all of these rules with, like, TSA and stuff was because of 9/11, but I'm starting to think it's because of Alexis Carrington, man. She just fucking foists her way into first class and starts screaming at Blake.
But that's the ultimate self-defense. I mean, you didn't have enough first class tickets. That's not my problem. I could have bought this whole fucking plane, but you wouldn't let me. So here I am, first class lounge, looking for Blake.
I love when she confronts Blake on the way to Bali that, like, all the other people in the first class lounge are, like, so offended by their altercation that they leave. Like, could you imagine playing that much for a plane ticket that you're so offended that you, like,
I don't think they're offended. I think
there's,
like, there's so many sparks flying, they don't know how to process it. They have to leave. It's,
well, they're, like,
much.
Physically touching each other. Like, she reaches for him and then he pushes her back. It's like, is anybody gonna press that button? I guess they didn't have those buttons
back
then. The
eject button?
No. The button for the rewind
button? The record over this tape button?
No, none of those
buttons. I do like that when he pushes her back into her seat, she does this like little fling to make sure her hair gets back into position.
Oh, yeah. But it doesn't take much because
Alexis
so
never wants to look bad, even in a fight. You know?
No, good for her. No, I mean, that's part of the reason I love this episode is the fact that they're kind of thrust together again on an international journey. And this time it's more important than her, like, you know, trying to make it seem like they're fucking and, you know, ruining his relationship with Crystal.
No, she can leave that up to Crystal this time because here we go again. Blake's jealous of Crystal and, you know, Crystal. Well, OK, it starts with Crystal having her abandonment issues. And, you know, she's like, mirror, mirror on the wall. And then she, like, gets that watery flashback, you know, effect. And it's, like, all about Mark, like, going on a pro tennis tour and leaving her behind and not taking her with him. And, of course, it kind of results in him just kind of being a failure or whatever. But,
I mean, and then we learn about the locket, which is the titular device of the episode. So,
But this is just like to feed back to Crystal's abandonment issues with Blake too. So it starts with Mark, but it kind of like comes to full bloom with Blake because, you know, here he is going off to Bali and she's packing her bags and he won't let her go with him.
Blake, please, please don't shut me out. You need me now.
I don't need anybody to help me fight my battles, Crystal.
Not even me.
Nobody.
And now she's just having the same, you know, sort of like locked in the closet, tied, bound, and beaten feelings about like Blake that she had about Mark.
But I do like that it seems like she's trying to take ownership of ending or creating finality with that relationship, which I guess it never really did have.
Oh no,
with her
she made
and
a
Mark.
Hot mess of that. She's
with
she's,
her and Mark.
She is such a flubstress because, like, most of the time she sits around in her vanity, peering in the mirror and thinking about the past, or she's like, you know, tromping around the pool and thinking about Steven and is he here or is he not. But now, like, she tries to, like, make a firm action to change something in her life. And she can't. She drives her, you know, her frickin' Rolls Royce to La Mirage, which is already a mistake. We already know what happens when you go to La Mirage. That's the land of the Lotus Eaters. You go there and you get opiated and nothing happens after that when you're there. It's a trap. And sure
well,
enough, her...
That's not her fault.
Wayward,
that's Frank's fault.
Well, yeah. Her wayward family relation is, like, hot on her heels. And his trashy Plymouth 220 or whatever that stupid car is. And
now, I have to give props to Frank, a.k.a. Sammy Joe's daddy, because that man can smell money from thousands of miles away.
Yeah,
Steven's body hasn't even been recovered yet. But he wants Sammy Joe, who, as you know, we remember that she was married to Steven. What's the marriage property laws in Denver? Like, is she titled to half of that stuff? Clearly, they didn't have a prenup because they got married in some ramshackled house by some old people. So,
well, if it's an Aaron Spelling production, it just means somebody from Fantasy Island's going to show up and reverse everything. So you better watch out.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he wants that money, honey, and he follows her all the way to Long Mirage. Now, I do think that she is to blame a little bit for that altercation because she didn't valet.
Do you think Crystal trusts anybody with her convertible Rolls Royce?
Well, whatever. It's clearly just set up
maybe
so
the,
Mark
Janney
can come save the day in his, you know, baby blue trousers and red sweater. And I'm kind of surprised they didn't have him, like, literally beat the shit out of Frank. Like, he just kind of roughed him up a little bit.
Well, it's interesting because we have a different director here. I'm not sure if he's ever done any prior episodes.
Jerome Cortland.
But, yes,
but I think he's done other episodes.
Yeah, I feel like the name's familiar, but I don't know. It sounds like a name of any director of bad TV in the 80s. So I don't know. But it does start off with this, like, weird shot of her in the oval mirror. And then, like, you get some other interesting, like, directorial choices. So I feel like maybe that was a choice, too, was don't beat the shit out of Frank Dean because the audience wants it so much, but you're not going to give it to them. It's also interesting that, like, Frank Dean's, like, in, like, Sears catalog attire from, like, 1974.
Yeah, totally stuck in the past as an Ohio race car driver.
Yuppie scum versus poor trash. Like, which stereotype is worse? And Crystal has to choose between the two. Who does she give the golden apple. I mean, frankly, I don't like either of the characters, but of course she's going to get herself into a trust bond with Mark over this. And now, like, you know, Blake's going to have a whole reason to think that she's screwing around on him while he's in Bali.
Yeah.
Even though, frankly... Don't you think that, I keep saying frankly, even though don't you think that...
Because Frank's in this episode.
I know.
Played by Matt Clark, who reprises the role. I was very happy to see. And you know that guy is still alive. He is 83 years young.
I think it's just him and Joan and Linda. I think everybody else is gone now.
I don't know about that. But yeah, he was, you know, he was on Walker, Texas Ranger and Chicago Hope. And I didn't realize this, but then it kind of clicked for me. He played Uncle Henry in Return to Oz.
Yeah, that was kind of like an eye-opener. I forgot about that movie and that character. But
yeah, I mean, he mostly came up in like the time of Westerns, so he was in a lot of Westerns
he's a stock character in that way. It definitely plays towards it, which, so it's like fine, like what he's wearing and what he's doing, it all kind of makes sense, even though it's the flashy 80s on Dynasty still.
Well, as Mark Jennings says, you know, he's going to break his good old boy neck, so he's just a good old boy.
I mean, it's interesting we were even feeling that way back then. I mean, those are political controversies that still hold up today, disturbingly. So don't you think that Blake went to Bali to find ladyboys? That's why he wants to leave Crystal behind, and he doesn't need her, doesn't want her.
No, there aren't really ladyboys in Bali. Now, have you been to Bali? No.
No, definitely not.
I have. Do you have any questions about what Bali is really like versus how it is depicted in Dynasty?
I'm going to be like Crystal. I don't want to know what Blake's getting on to in Bali. Don't tell me.
It's weird to me how this is set in Bali. I feel like if there was some like oil business stuff, it would have been in like Jakarta. Like Bali is like a...
Maybe it was uncharted territory.
You
this
know,
is capitalism at work, folks. Like, find the next opportunity.
I don't know. It didn't. It seemed like they were just trying to be exotic by setting this in Bali. But I don't know.
Yeah, this was just an excuse because they'd already used up Acapulco. So they're like, well, what's another cheap international destination?
Now, you know, Frank and Mark Jennings weren't the only people coming to fisticuffs. Jeff laid his hands on Joseph the bitchy butler, aka the malicious major domo, aka the domineering daddy.
Normally I would be down for let's rough up Joseph, but at this point, like, I've kind of realized he's a little bit of a sympathetic character. And also the way that it's done with like Jeff going bonkers because Adam is literally playing head games with him.
Yeah, it's not actually,
it doesn't really
Jeff.
Work.
Yeah. You can't really blame anybody here. Although, I don't know. I think that Joseph is being a bit too controlling. Although, I guess there's nothing really wrong with not wanting your daughter to fuck a married guy. So,
well, I mean, Joseph's in charge of the dining room and kitchen, so why wouldn't he be in charge of his daughter's
vagina? Yeah, I mean, he goes to Jeff's office, which I liked. You know, Joseph, here's the thing. As much as he annoys me, he keeps everything above board. He dots his I's and crosses his T's, you know.
He makes sure that cake gets frosted.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Jeff is not of sound mind, so he does not take to Joseph telling him not to bang Kirby Anders lightly. So then he starts kind of roughing him up. It seems like Joseph has been manhandled before because he doesn't really give Jeff any kind of reaction. He's just kind of like looks at his hands and is like, well, you want to get your paws off
Joseph
me now?
Joseph has spent the better part of the last 28 years being Blake's gimp. So I'm sure this is all like familiar territory for him.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like Joseph's going to get his way because Jeff is fueled by that shade of teal, and Kirby is like a hot little piece of ass that's going to do whatever she wants. And what she does not want to do is Adam Carrington. He has turned full on mustache twirling villain.
Tie him to the railroad tracks.
I'm waiting for him to go, mwahahahaha. They have poor Gordon Thompson like looking into the camera, giving us dirty looks.
At this point, the writers, they feel very comfortable with what this character is capable of because Gordon Thompson has made this character work. And I wasn't sure about him the first time I ever saw, you know, whatever first episode he shows up in. But I fully embraced the psychotic nature of Adam Carrington because He's even,
you don't
like,
think it's a little one-dimensional? It's starting to get
it
same
seems
same to
like
me.
It, but then like more things keep being introduced. Like he's like stroking his mother as she's grieving, and he's calling her mother. I mean, he's like basically Anthony Perkins as the original Psycho.
100%
keeps calling her mother, mother, mother. Like,
oh no,
so there's something like kind of uncomfortable and unsettling.
He's gonna
about
put
that.
Alexis Carrington in the basement for sure. Yeah, her skeleton will be there forever
in like a brass and glass rocking chair or something. There's this like scene where Herbie is doing Pilates with a perambulator. I suppose she's like,
I believe it was bar method.
I don't know. Whatever the hell it is. She's soothing the Prince Royal on the Carrington grounds. Psycho Adam drives up in the most psycho car ever, which is a 1982 Lincoln Mark VI with.
Didn't you own that?
Yes,
same car?
I'm a psycho too. Takes one to know one. So that's why I'm. Of all of the vintage cars I've ever owned, this was like my favorite because it's so mediocre and it's ugly and it's a really stripped down restyling of the Mark V, which is wildly popular. I think Ford sold like a 250,000 of those cars in 2 or 3 years, but then government gas regulations like kicked in and they had to downsize everything. Anyway, so you got an even less powerful motor.
Okay, this isn't a car podcast, but it definitely seems like he made this choice of this vehicle either like it was a hand-me-down from Cecil, or remember Blake was trying to give him that sporty, what was it, a Porsche or Miata?
Oh yeah, this is like the exact opposite.
It's the
of a
antithesis
Porsche.
Of
like,
that
it only cost about $24,000 at that year, which would be about $65,000 in today money. I don't know.
I think that little Blake's baby carriage probably cost as much.
Actually, that baby carriage and that car are sort of the same idea because they're these sort of reachbacks to 1920s, 30s, you know, automobile styling where there's like the covered headlights, but then they have like the funky parking lamps on top of them and the vinyl roof and the oval opera window and the wide white wall tires.
Did you think for a second that he was just going to keep driving right into that baby carriage? Because that's what I thought was going to happen.
In a weird way, it's Adam's baby carriage. It's like, you know, personal luxury vehicle that doesn't really do much but put you to sleep.
I'm really uneasy with Adam and Kirby, and clearly she is too, because every time he's around, she just like recoils like she's got PTSD. And again, Adam is just veered way too much into this villainous role that it makes me.
Yeah, I don't think Adam's even into her on a sexual level. I think it's more about the game and how much can he screw with her mind, not with her betwixt thighs.
But it also seems like he has so much confidence. And is that just because he grew up in Billings, so he was able to like snatch all of the pussy that he wanted? So
big fish in a small sea.
Yeah, maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. It's just so bizarre the way that he acts.
A love bizarre.
I mean, he's still kind of like flirting with his sister too, even when he's like trying to console her about her dead gay brother. It's weird.
Look, he's basically this close to like romancing his mother on the couch while she's grieving for Steven. So,
yeah, they were like humping.
You know, he's willing to use any dynamic to control a woman. We'll see how he works out with men, because so far he and Jeff are not a good match because Jeff's like under the influence of teal paint. But
yeah, I mean, he's trying to like come for him, but I don't know. I guess I appreciate the big dick energy of Adam Carrington, but I don't like how it kind of ends up playing out. It just seems hokey.
Well, another hokey thing about Adam is like he just like dresses like a grandfather.
He's dressing like Blake. It's so weird.
Ooh, yes. Good call out, because like, yeah, basically he's just trying to groom himself and everybody else around him to accept him as the next Blake. So he's probably planning on Blake being dead some point so he can take over the empire.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that psychotic, as soon as Blake got on the plane to Bali, that he went in his closet and started wearing his like boxers.
He's
and
like
cardigan
cross-dressing
sweaters.
But as Blake Carrington.
Well, that's not cross-dressing because they're the same gender.
I know, that's the joke, baby.
Anyway, well, we're talking about clothes now, so we might as well wrap things up and talk about our looks of the week.
We didn't really talk about the most important thing, which was the third act. The third act of this whole episode winds up with Alexis and Blake, you know, in Bali. And I like that she just kind of like walks in the room when like he's having his little row with the, I don't know. What is this guy? The foreman, the inspector, the flight attendant?
I have no idea.
I don't know who this guy is. He's just a white man of some privilege that controls certain things. So anyway, that's why Blake's consorting with him to go find Steven or the remains thereof.
Yeah, and it's this kind of like Indiana Jones adventure just that roll we're all with
it. Don't question it too much. And
I'm here for it.
But who's here to really question it? Alexis. She walks in the door. Like, she's just always the uninvited guest. And it doesn't matter because she's kind of like queen of the world. Like, other than Blake.
She has a 50% stake in this. This is her son.
So 100%, not 50%. And I just love that she like flits in with her tube top and her glamorous silver lamé giraffe print throwaway whatever shawl cape thing. I don't know what the fuck that is. But anyway, she's there to like stir up trouble, and she certainly does.
I absolutely detest this place. My room is full of insects. The entire hotel staff don't speak 10 words of English between them. And I've got this dreadful feeling that the news that we're waiting for can only be bad.
But the best part about how she stirs up trouble is she kind of just winds up the clockwork and then lets it go, because as she exits the room after she's pissed off Blake a little bit, which really is her MO. She just likes pissing off Blake.
But this is different. This isn't like a Rome situation where she set up this scheme. They're both desperate. Their son is probably dead for all they know. So she's not trying to like fuck him or screw him over. Steven is what they both care about. But even in that moment, Blake, and this is her fault because she's like had so many schemes for the past year and a half.
Well, her problem is she's a big dreamer. She just puts all of these creative ideas out into the world, aka schemes. They're not dreams, they're schemes. Sometimes they pay off, sometimes they don't, but she ends up getting tangled up in a lot of these things because she's put too much out there, and she can't, you know, manage all of it herself, but she's not going to trust anybody else to do it for her. So, you know, now she has to kind of like recover because like Blake kind of calls her out.
Yeah, I mean, rightfully so. He's like, you're going to come in here to fuck me, and then you're gonna go tell Crystal about it. Although it did kind of seem like he was like, well, I would have fucked you if you wouldn't have told Crystal about it.
I like that take on it, because this is really this is really an episode of swinging couples with exes, because it's like Crystal going back to Mark, Blake going back to
are
Alexis.
You allowed to bang your ex,
right? Even but it's if always like just to the edge. They never quite, you know, jump off the cliff. So like neither of these couples like goes back to where they came from.
I don't think any of these couples really wants to have sex with
each
other.
No, they really don't.
So it's fine.
So it's a real testament of like actual love. Like these people are just romantically interested in each other. It's not even really about the PNV. It's just more about the heart of it all. But anyway, it, you know, Alexis gets rightfully called out by Blake, you know, that she's hatching another scheme, but the girl can't help it. Like she just puts another bonbon on the conveyor belt, and Lucy can't eat him up fast enough. And you know, in the end, she has to just tell Blake, well, you just sit back and watch. I'm not going to spoil it for you. You're just going to experience how this all unfolds before your eyes. And it's all Alexis's plot that she hatched, you know. So
well, I'm really excited because it's all set up, because we've got the pilot who's gonna fly Blake and I guess Alexis through the storm to see if Steven's still alive. I mean, this could be like a Romancing the Stone situation years before Romancing the Stone even came out. So I don't know, I just love everything that was set up here. I love the character development. Mark Jennings is totally growing on me. I think Jeffrey Scott is really feeling comfortable in the character. Even Kirby, I don't like love her or anything, but I think Kathleen Beller is feeling more comfortable.
Yeah, she's not pissing me off anymore.
So I don't know. It's real juicy. So I'm excited to see what happens in next week's episode. Now it's time for the part of the episode where Kyler and I decide our looks of the week. Well, mine was hands down. I mean, there was a couple
you
of things
not pick mine
here and there, but I fucking
ooh, I'm gonna be
loved
hot.
Crystal
no.
in her turquoise.
No.
What?
God damn it.
Is
that was
your,
mine too.
I was for sure you weren't going to pick
she
that
She was
one.
Romancing the stone.
Hell yeah. She
turquoise
was romancing
from head
to toe. My eyeballs. I mean, I wanted to wear this like Memorial Day weekend.
See, this is when I am affirmed, though, that aesthetics are not subjective.
What
you
do
can,
you mean?
Because we both looked at something very independently and said, out of all the ridiculous Nolan Miller outfits in this show, this was the one.
Yeah.
We both identified this, and I love that.
Well, I mean, I think we normally veer towards what they give Alexis to wear. I mean, I think we can both agree that the young ladies, Kirby and Fallon, they're trolling them. I think I'm starting to think that there's some
it's too much merry-go-round wear or something. I don't know what's going on with the young folks
on this show.
Fallon
was literally dressed up as Violet Beauregard again, or like
Nay, Wicked Witch of the
Wicked
East.
Witch of the West.
West.
I think Southwest. The Wicked Witch of the Southwest. I mean, literally, she was coming in to pick up that phone call from Blake, and I was like, din, 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 din. I mean, this
she
is
she was
nuts.
Flying on a broom.
And yeah, Pamela Sue Martin, we know, has got that body, oddy, oddy, like, and they're going to put her, like, cover her literally neck to
this
stern.
Is like sort of the origin story of how young folks shrugged their shoulders at proper fashion.
No, I don't think that the young folks had any call in this. I think
You're just gonna blame Nolan Miller for
I think
this.
Nolan Miller was doing it, right. I don't know, but you know, mayhaps. You'd think Aaron Spelling would have chimed in and been like, can we
Aaron
get some
Spelling
tits out there, please,
about the clothes.
But yeah, something about Crystal in resort wear just clicks for me. Like last week, we had her in Acapulco. This week, we have her not in Bali, but I think she probably packed this for Bali. And she was like, well, Blake didn't let me go to Bali, but I'm going to wear what I was going to wear to the pool. You know?
Yeah, that's a fun take. I mean,
we got another plunging neckline.
I think a lot of this is about we're so burnt out on Alexis's, you know, very well-tailored suits and well-draped gowns and things. Like,
she looked great this episode.
She
I'm not going to complain.
You know, like, in fact, there were a couple of things in here that I almost sort of identified, but
I was for sure that you were gonna call out that last scene where she wears the silver, what is that, lamé, the flowy,
yeah, sort of like
thing.
Giraffe print silver lamé cape thing.
Yeah, I mean, it looked great, but I have to say, functionality, as somebody who's been to Bali,
no,
you
and it
would
like
never
something
wear
would,
something
yeah,
like
and
that.
It looked like something that would melt if you got near a lit cigarette, so I
yeah
don't, I don't,
well also
I'm shocked
like,
that Alexis would be so cheap.
It's not breathable at mm-hmm. all, and I'm sure that hotel in Bali did not have central air conditioning. None of the ones I'd
well,
stayed in.
She already gave her, like, you know, savage TripAdvisor review of second-rate hotels in Bali.
Insects, and they don't speak English.
No
I mean,
way.
I can get behind that.
So, yes, I love this look. It's because it's also this, like, interesting opaque patterned, I don't know what it is, like, I don't think
it's just like a horizontal
well,
line.
It's sort of horizontal, but then it's cut on the bias. So you get like a chevron on the back seam.
That's true. That's true.
Which complements the plunging neckline on the front.
And she keeps it simple too, because you could
the turquoise hubcap earrings. Yeah.
You could have totally done like a statement necklace with this, which I maybe wish she would have, but.
That's classic Crystal dressing, though.
Show like, off them bronze
she,
titties,
she
baby.
She never over-accessorizes. That's one thing I'll give this character, and it kind of fits in with her whole, like, mopey, dreamy, watery, like, just contemplating kind of character. Like, you know, she's not stating anything, so there is no chunky necklace to go with this.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, would have been a little bit 70s with this outfit, maybe. So, you know, it works.
Well, while I'm thinking about boobies, I have to say, this is the episode where I realized that Kathleen Beller is not an A cup. Oh my God. She was wearing a little sweater vest situation. And I kind of see maybe it's not the lead paint. Maybe Jeff just is a boob man because she's got some knockers on her.
I want them sweater vest boobies.
Mm-hmm. Again, I don't think that they're giving Kirby or Fallon the best clothes. But, you know, when Kirby goes to console Jeff, she's got them tiggo bitties.
You know, my grandfather had a Kirby vacuum cleaner that lasted for 60 years before we got rid of it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you just change the oil and give it a lube job every 6 months.
Well, thanks for joining us for another episode of Dynasty As They Wanna Be. Kyler, thank you for joining me again.
We didn't even talk about the locket. Why the hell was this even called that?
I'd rather they call it turquoise earrings than the locket.
Mirror, mirror on the wall.
And I want to especially thank the listeners for listening. I know it's a crazy time.
That's what
right
listeners
now.
Do. They listen.
Yeah, but they could also just be non-listeners. I don't know how it works. But thank you for joining us. We appreciate your support. If you want to support the podcast financially, we do have a Patreon set up. It's patreon.com/nastypodcast. And if you want to follow us between episodes, we're at Nasty Podcast. I wanted to give a little bit of a call out to one of our fans, Christina Harwell. She's at Stina Harwell. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly on Instagram. Anyway, you know, Joan's birthday was recently, and she posted the most beautiful tribute about Joan and Alexis and how it helped her through her divorce.
Yeah, we couldn't do it, so I'm glad somebody else.
Yeah, I'm not going to read it because it's kind of long, but also it's beautiful, so you should go read it for yourself. She's on Instagram. It's Stina, S-T-I-N-A, Harwell, I believe that's how it's pronounced, H-A-H-R-W-E-L-L. Anyway, go read her little tribute to Joan because it'll bring a tear to your eye. But also, did you know that both Joan and Alexis are Gemini?
All the best actors are Geminis. Or Libras, one or the other.
Or Capricorns.
No, Capricorns are terrible actors.
Betty White is a Capricorn.
Beatrice Arthur and Rue McClanahan were not.
All right. Anyway, go follow us on Instagram. We'll be here for the next episode, The Search. So go follow us on social media. Leave us a review if you haven't already. If you haven't and you listen all the time, what the hell is wrong with you? You got to tell other people to listen to this stupid ass show. But we'll be here next week for the episode, The Search. So are we going to find Stephen Carrington? I don't know.
I wasn't even searching for anything. So it's all brownies and walnuts to me.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.